Hi, and welcome to Jolly's Spring 2017 podcast series. This is Jen Whitley, the co-principal editor of the Journal of Language and Literacy Education, a peer-reviewed open access journal housed in the Department of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Georgia. Today I'll be speaking with Stephanie Ann Chilton of the University of Alabama about her piece titled, A Narrative Reflection on Examining Text and World for Social Justice, Combating Bullying and Harassment with Shakespeare. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining me today. It's a special treat having a past Jolly editor on board. I definitely look forward to hearing more about your piece.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having these conversations with authors.
Awesome. Well, to begin, can you describe the circumstances that led you to write this Voices from the Field piece for Jolly?
Yeah, I write about it a little bit in the article at the beginning, but before I moved into a PhD program, I was a high school teacher, and I was in a pretty socioculturally and politically conservative space. I remember when I first got there were a lot of, you know, like new teacher bios or whatever, and I always got asked questions about my husband, which is problematic because I'm a lesbian, and I got asked questions about church and how many children I was going to have, and it gave me a lot of cultural cues, but when I started teaching there also, I remember vividly was a half-page editorial in the local paper that the person who owned the paper had written that was just basically declaring that any LGBTQ plus person was just against God's will. And so that's the space where the school was situated. And we'd had a lot of bullying going on in the school. The school was about 80% students of color, but there's a lot of racialized tension, both in the community and in the school, and a young woman had been almost kicked to death during a fight in the school, and it had been based on racial tension. And then a young woman who had, I can't remember now if she had come out as lesbian or if she had come out as gender fluid, but she had to transfer to a different school system just because her experiences as a student were just hellacious there. She was just not supported, not understood. And so anyway, so I mean, there was a lot of bullying that was happening. There was a lot of harassment that was happening, and I was seeing it in my own classroom. And I as a brand new teacher, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how much I could do and not buck authority because I was still, you know, very young in my career. And the school purchased this anti-bullying curriculum, which I thought was great initially when it was announced. And they started playing them over the extremely antiquated classroom televisions that we had gotten, I don't even know, like 20 years back from Channel 1 back in the day. They were clearly intended for like elementary school kids. And it created this atmosphere where the students understood the issue to be less serious than it was because of the materials that were being used. And the administration, just because of the lack of resources, the lack of money, it's a very impoverished area, didn't have the money to try a different curriculum after they had purchased this. And so this article is about my efforts to try to address, at least within my own classroom, a wide range of forms of discrimination that I saw, and to do it through a text that was readily and freely available.
Great. Thank you for explaining. Why is it so important to have an anti-bullying curriculum for the classroom? And what recommendations do you have for teachers who work in environments where this sort of curriculum may not be fully supported by their supervisors or administrators?
So I think it's important because if forms of discrimination and issues of social justice are incorporated into a classroom on a daily basis, it becomes as much a normalized part of understanding, of interaction, and of language as any of the less pleasant aspect of actual bullying and harassment. A lot of teachers and administrators see the very normalized way that discriminatory language and actions happen in schooling, and addressing those issues in curriculum helps to normalize them in the opposite sort of way. And so I think it's one of the reasons that it does belong in classrooms. I recognize that it creates additional work for teachers who are already completely overwrought and underpaid, but it does create an atmosphere where you're able to have regular conversations. You have a community of trust that doesn't exist outside of your classroom, where you're able to potentially delve into more difficult topics, which is something you're just not going to get if you haul all the kids to a gymnasium or an auditorium. And then in terms of advice I would give teachers that live in spaces that, frankly, were quite similar to where I was, I think it's important to have a very realistic understanding of the boundaries that exist. I'm all for pushing boundaries as far as you can push them. And I know that early on in my career, I would go to these conferences where people would say, well, you know, people have got to do this work. You're just going to have to suck it up and do it. And, you know, and I would think to myself, like, that's really easy for you to say because you live in a major university town or you live in a major metro area. There's plenty of job opportunities for you. There's plenty of resources outside your school. A number of them come in from districts where there was far more substantial funding than what my school had. And it's like, it's easy for you to preach when you're not having to deal with the realities of what you're talking about. So I think it's important for teachers to fully recognize the boundaries. I think it's completely possible for teachers who want to try to do this work in being cognizant of those parameters to move within them and to do as much as is absolutely possible. Because I will argue that teaching is always political, always. If you choose not to address bullying, that's a political move, whether you intend for it to be or not. And so, you know, choosing to address bullying is politicized as well. And so you're always making political decisions. And so you have to figure out ways to justify them within your context. And, I mean, that's one of the reasons that this particular article, which is narrative-based, talked about using Shakespeare, because that was deemed safe and approvable and appropriate by my administration. I had to pick a curriculum material that was legible to them, that was justifiable to them, because if I had tried to use a lot of the YA books and a lot of the other curriculum materials that other people advocate using, it simply just would not have happened. It unquestionably would have cost me my job, and it might have even had a bunch of repercussions beyond that.
That's very helpful and powerful, I think. Thank you. So as you mentioned in this piece, you used Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice to engage in critical discussions regarding sexism, religion, homophobia, and other issues. Why did you use this text specifically, and what implications came out of that choice?
I wish that I could say that it was some sort of really thought out, carefully planned implementation. But I mean, the fact is, the primary reason I used it was because the school owned enough copies for a classroom set. They didn't own enough copies for more than that, but there was a classroom set. They were not going to approve me to have additional books. I mean, they just weren't. And it was a text that we owned that no one else was using. So that's the reason I used it, frankly, was because I knew it was justifiable and legible and safe as far as the administration was concerned. Parents would not really question why students were reading Shakespeare, nor would other teachers, and then it was readily available and it didn't cost me anything. And so I knew the administration would approve it. But in terms of the implications, I'd read The Merchant multiple times and I'd really thought about the social justice implications. And so I knew that there was potential. I will add that. It wasn't, you know, just that it was a Shakespeare play and it was free. It also was that I knew that there was potential there in the text because I was familiar with it. But the implications for it were pretty broad and pretty wide sweeping and were beyond what I had anticipated, because when I started, what I had planned to do was talk about the xenophobia and the bigotry that are evident in the Jews versus Christians discourse in the play. And I wanted to talk a little bit about gender in terms of Portia, one of the main characters, being forced to marry at her dead father's behest. And then if I could get away with it, I wanted to talk about the fact that there was at least one potentially gay character as well. And I was interested in talking about the ethnicity component and then the gender and sexuality component, but it became a lot bigger than that. I even mentioned briefly in the paper that, I mean, we got to talk about, like, Islamophobia, for example, which is something that a number of my students had personally experienced. And I don't know that without this text we would really have been able to have that conversation and it be okay, because I do know that had I brought in an explicit news story, there would potentially have been a moment when I got called into the principal's office, which happened more than a few times when I was a teacher. But, I mean, the implications were that because it was such a rich text, we got to go in directions that I hadn't anticipated and that the students brought in based on their own experiences, their own readings of themselves and their worlds. And so that was very cool. And it's always what happens when you give students opportunities to engage with their lives as text in relation to an actual written physical text.
I think you bring up a great point. Sometimes you have to use what is allowed and available to you. And I think that's important for our listeners to hear from someone who's had experience from K-12 to now in the university. In your piece, you wrote, and I quote, "What is most critical is that teachers realize there is true social justice potential in every classroom and every assigned material," end quote. Can you unpack the statement for our listeners?
I'll try to briefly. I said earlier, teaching is always political. And it's interesting that a lot of times teachers, teacher education programs, administrators will try to talk about educators and educating as if there's some sort of ideologically neutral stance that one can take. And so I want to emphasize that the things that you choose to leave out because they're too difficult, because they're too controversial, because they're too misaligned with who you are or what you believe, those are political decisions. And I think that it's irresponsible to not acknowledge that there is political motivation and political ramification for making those decisions. And so that goes back to every classroom, because it is so politically laden based on the decisions that teachers are able to make and based on the decisions that teachers are not permitted to make, there is social justice potential there. If teachers are able to negotiate with administrators to have more resources or to have more space and autonomy, then really the sky's the limit in terms of what you might accomplish. But if you're in a more confined space, which I think is often the case in the places that need this sort of work the most, I think there's a lot of discourse nowadays where the ways that we as a nation distrust teachers, the ways that we dismiss teachers, the ways that we tend to relegate teachers to being some sort of a babysitting service, I think that's damaging. And I think teachers even unconsciously internalize that. And I think that one of the things that all teachers should do is really embrace the fact that you're an educated individual. You have been entrusted with the care of the lives and the livelihood and the well-being and the education of children, whatever the age group. And you have the ability to shape their lives. And what you do every single day is doing something to that effect. And so if you decide that that's going to be aligned with a social justice agenda, then you can do that. And it may just be really small things, like asking them a really open question about, so what do you think about the fact that this narrator is a girl? Or what do you think about this particular individual's description of this relationship? And then letting kids potentially take it in directions that you yourself can't go as the adult. I think what I meant by that statement is I want teachers to recognize that they really do have the ability to do all of the change the world, change the life work that brought them into the profession. And all of the talk that surrounds education that suggests that teachers don't have that ability is nonsense. And I think most teachers are invested in the welfare and the livelihood and the well-being of kids. And I think that that's a very social justice agenda aligned mindset. And I think that teachers need to recognize the ways that they can shape classroom discourse and shape classroom materials to give students the opportunity to have those conversations that they themselves as teachers are not necessarily allowed to do that.
Those are great suggestions. Thank you. I think it's interesting that when you collected this data, you were a classroom teacher in a rural high school, and now you teach research methods at a large university. Who is your target audience for this piece specifically, and what do you hope they get from it?
I think my target audience is really anyone who teaches, because I have far more autonomy now as a university faculty member than I ever did as a high school teacher. But the profession is no less politicized regardless of the two settings. And that's fact. I mean, where I was as a high school teacher, in many respects, because I'm in Alabama now, which is a pretty conservative state. And high school where I was at, the context was certainly very politically conservative. But the state in which I'm situated now is also very politically conservative. But it doesn't change the political work that can be done, the political potential that is always there for teachers. And so I think my target audience is any teacher who is interested in, aspires to, hopes to invite conversations about social justice. I also think that a good target audience is teacher educators. I think that teacher education programs are very full of optimism, which I think is not a bad thing at all. But I think that there's a lot of materials that teacher educators assign and ask students to read that assume a very different sociopolitical and cultural context than most first-year teachers get to participate in. And I think that there's definite value and power in reading an account from someone who's in a space that's very confining and is still managing to do some work, and not to guilt teachers into feeling like, oh, well, I'm not doing enough, but instead to help teachers see there are ways to wiggle outside the boundaries a little bit and still be safe professionally, be safe socioeconomically. Because, you know, at the end of the day, teachers have to protect themselves, but if you're not doing social justice work, you're also not protecting your kids or your soul, I would argue.
Wonderful. We are very excited about this article and the impact it'll have on our readership. Thank you for taking the time to talk about your work with myself and Dolly listeners today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for accepting the article. And I do want to say really quickly that I think the review process for Dolly is amazing, and the reviewers gave incredible feedback and were so speedy about it, and the entire process for the journal has been only positive, and so I'm very grateful.
Thank you again. Listeners, please continue the dialogue again here by engaging with Stephanie's piece in our spring 2017 issue themed Out of the Box and Into the Margins.